Our mission is a simple one. Era 5050 want to see women represented on stage and screen in equal numbers to men.
Here, on the New Era podcast, we will be talking to the women and men of the moment who are working towards equality, celebrating their success and discussing the solutions we can use to help move the industry forward.
Welcome to episode 5 of the New Era podcast. I'm Ellie Yates.
And I'm Rose Riley. And thank you for joining us. This episode, we are focusing on women in film.
So we thought a good person to speak to would be Era 5050 supporter Gemma Arterton. So Gemma began her career in 2008 when she graduated from the RADA and quickly secured breakout roles in St. Trinian's, the Bond film Quantum of Solace, and played the eponymous role in the BBC adaptation of Tess of the D'Urbervilles. Cut to 2016 and she set up her own production company, Rebel Park Productions. Their debut project, Leading Lady Parts, is an all-too-real comedy short about the female experience of the casting room, starring a whole host of incredible actresses like Felicity Jones, Lena Headey and Gemma Chan.
In 2018, Gemma produced and co-created The Escape, a largely improvised film about a mother struggling with the breakdown of her marriage. The film received excellent reviews and Gemma was nominated for a BIFRA Award for Best Actress and won the Harper's Bazaar Award for Woman of the Year for her work on the film. On stage, she has trod the boards in iconic female roles such as Nell Gwynn, St. Joan and real-life equality activist Rita from Maid in Dagenham, to name just a few. This is just a taster of the huge body of female-led work that she's been part of. We also wanted to talk to her for this episode because of her work as an activist. She's a prominent and outspoken voice for the Time's Up movement and a long-standing champion of the Era 5050 campaign.
We had a chat with her a couple of weeks ago about her work as an actress, activist and film producer.
Like, our first question, I suppose you've had such a huge spanning career and now you've set up your own production company. What made you want to do that?
When I look back on my career, there are definitely moments I'm quite harsh on myself. I'm quite critical of myself, as you'll garner from this interview, I guess. And I'd made some choices that were not the right choices for me in terms of my work. And I'd done this one very commercial American film in 2015, I think it was, that just made me want to stop acting. It was absolutely dreadful. I was the only woman on set apart from the hairdresser and I felt tiny and it was bad work and I wanted to stop acting or at least, you know, not do films and telly and stuff. And so I spoke with one of my friends who's a producer and she was going through the same thing and she said, we've got such great connections with people. And there are so many stories to be told. I mean, even just real life stories. But why don't we set up our own production company and just make stuff ourselves rather than wait for stuff to come along, which isn't going to come along to you or me. So we did that. And it's been a really long process. It's slow producing. Sometimes it can be really quick. Like with Leading Lady Parts, it will happen within like 3 weeks, or sometimes it can take 5 years to make something. But it's all just been so satisfying, just getting those relationships together. But yeah, it was at the time in 2015-16, it was before we'd had the Me Too movement and this kind of spotlight being shone on the industry for its kind of, you know, first of all, it was about harassment, but then it was also about representation. And then Era 5050 and Time's Up got together and, you know, it became actually, you know, what is the problem? Oh, there's not that many women on film sets or on, you know, behind the scenes. Therefore, women feel awkward and they can't speak out or objectified at times or, you know, so it all went hand in hand. But at the time in 2015-16, it was, didn't feel like we knew how we were going to get these things done. You know, I didn't know that there was a big movement about to happen. So since then, it's all like, okay, well, female director, you know, there's millions of female directors, but it's still a struggle, but it's changed a lot even in the space of two or three years.
So as a producer, what excites you?
I think I have quite an eclectic taste. I don't, I like things that are unique, that haven't been explored before. Yeah, something that has a strong visual style or... but usually, I mean, this is... I think just because I'm a woman, like with literature that I tend to pick up when I'm in the bookshop, mm-hmm. tends to be, not all the time, but female characters or female-led, just because I feel like maybe I can relate to it more. Or so, you know, with Rebel Park, it's not exclusively a female-led content, but it tends to be leading towards that. But yeah, I mean, I also like really funny stuff, mm-hmm. and I think there always has to be humour, even if you're doing something really, really dark. Yeah. I think there's always, otherwise it can be a bit too, this is my own taste, this is my own taste, but I always think a bit of humour is good somewhere.
Yeah. Is it the same when you're looking at a role as an actress? Are you drawn to the same kind of stories?
No. Different. Acting work is so different. Yeah. I should be much more selective. I think I'm a little bit... I tend to be intuitive with certain things. I don't... I know whether something's right for me or not. Sometimes I make a choice because I just fancy working with that person or with that director and it not be kind of for the art kind of thing.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah.
Like,
I watched The Escape. Yeah, we both watched The Escape. Which
oh, God,
was,
sorry.
Tell you
it's
what,
quite heavy.
Tough watch as a six-month pregnant woman. It was, yeah.
But
it's
that,
it was an incredible film.
Yeah,
and a story
really,
that we just don't... I've not seen that
we were saying,
perspective before.
Yeah, the depiction of, like, depression in that familial unit hasn't been shown like that before.
But it really is around. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I think in my family, there's a lot of sort of depression, and when I was growing up, that was around me.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I remember thinking, God, you only ever see hysterical women. You never see, you know, on screen or whatever, or on stage. You see depressed women in Ibsen, but then they're hysterically depressed rather than just being really...
The day-to-day kind of worn down...
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's really horrible to watch and really painful and really boring as well because you're thinking, God, just do something, you know.
Yeah. Mm.
But I really wanted to tell this story about this particular thing. And I think, you know, some films are really challenging or plays or TV. You know, not everything's supposed to be enjoyable to watch. So I had to kind of come to terms with that when we were releasing the film.
Yeah.
I remember when we first put it out, we showed it at a festival and I actually had a panic attack when we were watching it. Because every time someone would leave the theatre or go to the loo, maybe they were going to the loo, and I'd be like, oh my God, they hate it. Oh, this is too hard for them, you know, because it's not easy. And I know now that that film is being used by psychologists and therapists for, you know, women or men suffering with postpartum depression or whatnot. I don't know how it would help them in any way, but it's nice that they're using it.
Just so it's the whole thing with representation, right? If you see someone else going through something that you can relate to, you feel less alone with it, maybe.
And what were you kind of involved in kind of inception?
Or? Yeah, the way the director works is... Dominic Savage, he's called, and he works with actors really, really closely. Kind of, it's like if you're a real actory actor, you love all this stuff. He kind of gets into you, like, what's your issues? Like, wait, you know,
and then he'll go,
you know, she's afraid of being a mother. Yeah. Oh, let's write a film about that. And then the whole thing is improvised. You know, there's no script. They're in the house. She talks to him about this. That she's unhappy. That's it, you know. So you kind of know the architecture of the story, but actually it's all up for grabs. I loved it. It was really intense, but it was great. I mean, in the end product, you're not thinking about the end product. You're just thinking about what you're doing at the time, and actually it's a really healthy way of, well, as an actor, it's a really good way of working. So it was really, really creative. It was the most creative thing, and I just threw myself into it and... That was really great. I loved doing that.
Mm. Is that something that have you always been interested in kind of creating work yourself? Or was there something that happened where you went, now I need to start
telling
stories I want to tell?
I started off doing physical theatre back in the day before the RADA. I was doing a lot of physical theatre, which is all devised theatre. And so we were, as a company, always creating the work ourselves. And I loved it. I was in my element. And actually, sometimes I think, oh, maybe I should have gone into that, you know. And you would just make stuff, and some of it would be rubbish and some of it would stick. And that was what you'd do all day long, and there was no judgment. And then I went to RADA, and then it became, my career went in a totally different place to where I thought it would ever go. So I think, you know, I've always enjoyed being around a lot of people and finding stuff. And I in terms of, you know, film and TV production, I like getting a collection of people together and kind of creating the concoction, which I really enjoy. I love working with other people rather than on my own. So that's, sometimes it can feel quite isolated. You can feel quite isolated as an actor, I think, especially when you're not working. So for me, when I'm not working, it's really nice to have an outlet where I feel like I'm still creating something somewhere.
It's really interesting because we were talking about this yesterday, and I was talking about it with someone the other day. That kind of spirit of collaboration and like kind of wanting to bring all of the right people onto a project and it be a like a team sport rather than kind of hierarchical. Feels like quite a female way of working. Have you found that?
Yeah. I just did this film called Summerland, and it's written by and directed by Jessica Swale. And it was her first feature film. And so she was like, this is how I work. And she was completely inclusive. She comes from the theatre industry. I remember she would do this thing every day called a fact sheet that she would write every day with facts and things for each scene. What's the intention of the scene? You know, what are the obstacles in this scene? But for each scene, we'd be doing like six scenes a day because we had no money. Anyway, and then all these other facts and things. Daily Digest, that's what it was called. And she did it every single day on top of directing and, you know, on everything else. And I said to her, Jess, you don't have to do this. And she would give it to every crew member. So you've got like these sparks going, oh, all right, we got this Daily Digest thing. And they loved it because they felt so included. Yeah. And usually on a film set, the sparks don't talk to the, you know, the costume department or whatever, you know, everyone's got their own clans. But what she did was really include everybody and make everyone feel just as important as everyone else. And she also said that time, I mean, it's so silly, these things, but they really make a big difference.
Yeah.
In lunch, everyone's mixes together, right? And I would never have lunch on my own. I always made sure I went and had lunch with all the actors and all the director and all the crew. And it just created this community of people working together on something that they really cared about. And I'd never experienced anything like that on a film set before. That's the way she works. And she doesn't believe in hierarchy. Obviously, there is a natural hierarchy and people look to a director as their captain, but it was brilliant. And also, it was a completely gender-balanced film crew and cast. So that changed a lot of things, I think. I don't know. I think maybe it's a feminine thing. I don't know. I think yes and no. I think, I don't know, because I know some women as well that are very love to be number one.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And let everyone know that they're number one.
Yeah.
I mean, you're literally numbered, aren't you, on a film or TV set?
Yeah, you
know your place.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You do. It's terrible. Yeah. I think, you know, in theatre, it's a much healthier environment. I struggle with that hierarchy in the film industry. I mean, the size of someone's trailer compared to the other person You know, I mean, it's just a waste of energy, really, and doesn't necessarily create good work. It definitely creates insecurity in people. And, yeah, I think it's definitely a better way to work. When in theatre as well, you know, you have your dressing rooms. Some people have bigger dressing rooms than others. But I heard that Mark Rylance, he takes all the doors off the dressing rooms.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so you're all chatting.
Yeah.
And you're all part of each other's experience backstage. Could be quite intense if you had a quick change. Yeah. You were not comfortable about showing, but I'm sure they have
discreet areas.
But that's quite a nice thing as well, I think.
So how about the activism? When did you first, or do you see yourself as an activist? And was it a kind of lightning bolt moment on a particular job, or was it just the cumulative experience that you've had in the industry that made you want to talk about your experience? And
well, I've always been someone that can't not talk about my experience. So great. Much as I lament, I get myself so wound up by saying stuff that's happened to me and then regretting having said it. But then actually, you know, for example, in my early career, I really hated the way I was treated on certain films. And I always knew at the time it was wrong and really sexist. I just knew it in my soul that it wasn't right. And then I couldn't help but talk about it. But then I'd get the whole, oh, you're whinging. Oh. And then I think, so that's probably when I started sort of speaking out on anything. But then I did this musical, Made in Dagenham, and that was an amazing thing for me. There was this bit towards the end of the run, loads of people started coming to see the show. Like Emma Watson came one night, I remember. And I don't know what it was, but she was in the audience and I had this big speech that was kind of like her speech to the UN that she did, yeah. He for She speech. Actually, I even think I might have said to the writer, you should do that, if not now, when line, as a sort of homage to her. And we did. And she was in the audience and the whole house, it just brought the house down. And I felt, even though I was playing an activist, I felt the power of speaking out because I felt it went through me. And so there was this magical sort of couple of weeks of the run where I'd literally have the audience go, yeah, 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 we believe you, Rita. It's like, obviously, I'm not Rita. Yeah. And I think then I thought, oh, yeah, you can, you know, speak about. And I at that time as well, I was also doing stuff for, you know, equal pay. And there was this Equal Pay Act that went through. I mean, I feel a little bit awkward talking about this kind of stuff because I'm just an actor. And sometimes I think, you know, I'm not a proper activist, like real activists that are out there and they don't get paid and they work. Some of these people I've met through work I've been doing with Time's Up or whatever, they're really inspiring people. And I can invite them along to talk on something or make a film and whatever, but it's not as powerful as what they're doing in any way, shape or form. So I guess my activism is quite sort of small in comparison, but definitely is there in a subtle way in my work.
But there's something to be said for like using your influential voice to raise, you know, it's interesting how you talk about it being small, and there's something about kind of women and any kind of activism there, and you know, is this whole like whinging actresses, that thing. It feels hard because actually using your voice is like a really great thing, and you know, activism might not be your kind of number one job that you're doing all day every day, but you're using your voice of influence to talk about that rather than maybe what you're wearing,
yeah,
you know, or some of the more banal questions that you might get asked.
Yeah, you're right. I still feel like I literally on my way down here today, I was telling you guys earlier, I might be guest editing something, and like it's great because it means that I can kind of draw attention to loads of issues and, you know, things that I care about. And it's been really on my mind the last few weeks, going, but I don't care. I'm not out there as much as I should be. You know, I'm not, you know, doing enough. I feel like I could be doing so much more. You know, I should just get on with it and do more stuff, really. But there you go.
I mean, it's amazing that you're saying that, because I just think, like,
we're all so good at minimising what we're doing, aren't we? It's just really...
I think it's quite a feminine thing.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah.
So how are you involved in the Time's Up UK?
Right? Yeah, yeah, Time's Up UK, because there's the Time's Up US, which is like full on Time's Up. And then there's us.
Time's Up UK.
Saying sorry.
Yeah. Like drinking tea.
Honestly, that's what it is. So Time's Up was started years ago in the US. And then when the Harvey Weinstein story broke, there was a meeting in New York and LA with various actors, actresses, talking about their experiences with harassment and whatnot. Then we had one in the UK around the same time, around Christmas, that was set up by Emma Watson. And I went to a couple of meetings and realised that I was quite outspoken in those meetings. And somehow it just took took me over a little bit, actually. There was all this activism going around. You know, they'd had this kind of, like, everyone wearing black at the Golden Globes, and the BAFTAs were coming up, and we were like, we need to do something. And so I ended up being told that I was going to organise that whole thing, which I did, which was incredibly stressful and exhilarating and amazing. And at the same time, we set up this fund called the Justice and Equality Fund, which is a fund that helps women from all backgrounds, all walks of life, to get legal support. It's kind of like the Time's Up legal fund. So if you've been raped, it means that you can get funding for the for the legal. A lot of people don't go to the police or try anything because they can't afford to. So we set that up, and then since then, Time's Up they've done loads of stuff in the industry in terms of workplace harassment. In terms of the film and TV and theatre industry, set up this thing with BAFTA and the BFI about reporting harassment. But then outside of that, so in the last year, they've been working really closely with Care International, who are an amazing organisation. And there's been this big outreach for people to sign a petition about how violence against women is still happening and that no one's doing anything about it, and it needs to be a crime. And so they've had a big milestone that there's an actual law now globally that says that violence against women is illegal. So that should be implemented in June. So there's loads of stuff, and it's become like a kind of thing now, Time's Up UK. There's like an administrator and meetings, and there's subgroups. There's like a writers group, and then there's women of colour group, and then there's kind of up and coming talent group, and then there's kind of anyone group. But it's really cool. I loved it because it was the first time that I was in a collection of people, like, you know, women, where it was all of us, you know, and we were all sharing our experiences, and it was actually a really unifying thing. And I got to meet people that I wouldn't normally meet, just because, you know, usually we're in competition with one another, but they're like my contemporaries. And then leading lady parts, this short film I did, I basically like capitalised on that when I was casting it and getting it together. And that was a lovely thing. So now I have, I'd say, you know, friends that I didn't have before that I can, you know, think about working with or producing something for them, or just created loads of connections, which was something that sometimes, I think in this industry you can feel very disconnected from people. Or even for myself, sometimes I feel like I'm too shy to make a connection with some or reach out. Like, we tend to kind of not do that. I think it's a really, really important thing to do, because there are times when you just think, what am I doing, you know? And you can reach out and there's other people there going, yeah, I'm going through it too, or don't worry, there's this thing you can come to where we talk about this or whatever.
And there's something about being, I think, gives people agency, right? And a collective agency. And I think the power of that is why there's so much activism that's suddenly
burst up.
Yeah, because people feel like actually they can make a bit of a change.
And like you say, just the power of being in the same room at the same time, like your experience you're talking about earlier of being the only woman on set, and then suddenly you're in a room full of women who have been that only woman on set, and you can share your experiences.
And they're like valid, when you've had a gripe that before you'd think, oh, I'm just lucky to have a job, don't whinge. But then when you talk about it with someone else and they go, no, that's really, really shit what happened to you. It happened to me too. And you think, no, actually, you know, we should change this, rather than, you know, the whole better not complain, better not kind of create a storm in a teacup. So that's really good. And I've noticed a lot of change. I mean, I did this, Netflix thing. And it was the first time. Netflix are actually like the pioneers of harassment training. They so before you do the job, everyone has harassment training. So, you know, either someone will come in and talk to people about if you see harassment on a film set, like what to do. This is the number to call. This is what is, you know, potentially offensive to someone, like showing them some porn on your phone or whatever, you know. And I had to do my harassment training over the phone with two other actors on the line.
All linked in.
Who were David Walliams and Adil Akhtar. And I could tell, and they were like, I could tell. I know both of them. I knew them both from before anyway. And I could tell they were both like, oh, shit. We've got Gemma on the phone, so we have to behave. She's going to get all feminist on us. And I could tell they were being really earnest. Like, no. Why would anyone show pornography on their phone to someone? And, you know, it was very funny, but at the same time, brilliant. I was, you know, I was there even thinking, God, this is kind of preposterous. But it's just great to talk about it before you even start something. It's just out in the open. And then obviously we had this joke on set. Anytime anyone would like brush past you, you go, harassment. But, you know, it was a comedy and there were lots of funny people around. But yeah. I loved how before it would be something that you'd never speak about. And there you are sort of on day zero before you've even started work. And it's all been spoken about. And there's a language, and that's like a big, massive thing that changed as a result of this whole Time's Up Me Too thing. I think there are some production companies that still don't do that, but more and more people are, so that's good.
And the fact that you all knew that you'd all had the same training yes, at the beginning exactly, means you're all yeah. on the same.
Yeah, and like you say, you've got a shared field. Language yeah. then to talk about it.
Yeah,
without feeling awkward or
yeah
difficult.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. yeah. It's just laying out the guidelines of, you know, for someone else to say, look, you might find this acceptable behaviour, but, you know, one example was there was a makeup artist who'd come in after a weekend and you'd be people getting made up in the chair and she'd talk about her sex life that weekend with the girls, you know, with the hair and makeup girls, but there's, like, actors in the chair and the actors would find it, you know, really offensive, or they didn't want to know about that, she was mortified. But it's, you know, it's just having a little bit of awareness about, you know, the working environment that you're in. It's still like,
because it can feel so casual,
yeah,
which is sometimes dangerous, isn't it? Because
yeah.
you know, you can have that chat in the pub maybe, like afterwards yeah. for drinks, but it is a professional environment that you're in, and it's so easy to forget yeah. that, I think.
It's because it's the nature of this job, I think, yeah, as well. Yeah. We play. That's our job. And it's not sitting behind a desk. It's fun yeah. most of the time. So you can kind of get lost in that, but forget sometimes that it is a workplace. So it's good that there's these guidelines and things like that.
Since the kind of Time's Up and Me Too movements a couple of years ago, have you noticed a change, not just in the behaviour of people on set, but the makeup of the people on set, maybe?
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I mean, I say that, and I did this job, there were about 3 women in this cast of 95.
Oh, God.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was set in World War One, where there yeah. were no women.
No, we didn't exist.
We didn't.
1914 and
1918. Yeah,
we didn't. No.
So that's the excuse. But I think if you're going to get your funding from public resources, then you will see that there are a lot of changes that, you know, in order to qualify for certain things, you have to be diverse and have not equal representation. But, you know,
balanced.
Keep that in mind, yeah. yeah. And if you're not getting your money from those places, then it will be more, in my experience, it's a bit more old-fashioned. So it will be a bit boys' clubby. I feel like commissioners are really aware of things now. You know, going into meetings for, you know, at BBC or ITV, they're really thinking about, you know, being as inclusive as possible. I think that's something that's changed a lot in the last year. So I think it's good. I think it's really good. My only gripe is that you make the work and I still don't feel it gets supported in the right way, because there's a whole different network of people that release work and publicise it. And I think that it's still very kind of elitist, that side of stuff, and old-fashioned, but it's all going in the right direction, so it's good.
Is that kind of, just on that point, is that kind of coming from your producer hat, as in when you're making work, when you're trying to get that out there, that it's not supported, perhaps, if it's got a bit more of diversity in it, or what kind of...
What do I mean by that? Okay, for example, you'll get a finance from, like, the BFI, for example, for having a female director or writer. But then when you go to send it to a big film festival like Cannes or Venice, then it tends to be the kind of more established male directors that will get that the slot there. And, you know, the argument is, well, the best films should be the ones that are in the festival. And I to a certain degree, I do agree with that. But there are other places that these new voices can be placed, and I feel like it's really hard to do that. So Cannes this year was just a complete disaster in terms of female-directed films. I think there were three in the whole festival, including short film. I mean, I know that for my own self, I wouldn't like to know that I was only in a festival because they were ticking a box. But at the same time, at least you get an opportunity to show your work and it to have a platform. So that's why quotas are quite good sometimes. And then you can kind of make another thing, which is really good and gets in on its own merit or whatever. So I just feel sometimes I feel a bit like that's still a bit of a struggle. But having said that, Billy Piper's just made a film, and she wrote and directed it and started it, and it's in the Venice Film Festival in competition. Yeah. Award her for that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I said that, and then, you know, the supporting Billy's. So yeah. It's okay.
But this is the thing, I think, is that people go, oh, but there's this one person who's got in,
success.
And so they're
We've
flying the flag for women. You go, yeah, but how many films are there in the festival? And you've got, like, three female directors. It's not...
Yeah.
I think quotas, as difficult as they are to suggest, they do start shifting things. They start shifting the status quo, and you have to... make a shift somewhere, otherwise
it's encouraging to hear that at the beginning, at the kind of getting funding to get things made stage, things are moving,
yeah,
and then
definitely.
Hopefully when there's enough of that it will bottleneck and
I mean things are moving in a certain budget bracket. You can't ask for more than 5 million to make a film if you're a woman, unless you're like super established. So it's,
and then if you fail once,
It's hard. It's hard. It's hard to make any film, basically, and for it to be either good or seen. I'm learning this as time goes on. Right. Okay. And if you get both of those, oh my God, you hit the jackpot.
Have you got, what are your plans or what are your hopes for your production company moving forward?
Yeah, so... I have got a few things that we're doing. We've got a TV series that we're doing next year, and hopefully this kind of mad film. Oh my God, it's so mad. It's like a kung fu movie with women set in the north of England in 1979.
That's wicked.
And then we've got a more serious one. You know, it's all very long form. It's all very, you know, but there's two active projects. I think that at the moment, it's very grassroots, our production company. We don't have a headquarters. We don't have a website, which is really irritating me because I know I need to get on with it and sort that out. And it's very sort of like, you know, I'd like for us to have a proper, you know, people that work for us and, you know, have a development department so that we can start working with writers, because that's my favourite bit. One of my favourite bits is finding writers and working with them. So yeah, it might be something that I can concentrate on a bit more when I'm, you know, pregnant or something like that, raising children.
You get loads done.
Because I'm often working and as an actor, and sometimes that's it's frustrating when I know I should be producing stuff, and, you know, we really share the load in my team. There's three of us, and it's like I will go and I'm doing kind of like really boring stuff with the lawyers and things like that, which I don't have that sort of mindset, and yet I'm doing all that and contracts, and that's what producers do. And so sometimes when I'm working as an actor, I can't concentrate on it I don't know how Renee Zellweger does it. Well, she's got an amazing company, and I went and met them when I was in LA. After we'd made leading lady parts, they reached out to us and said, "We've seen your film, it's amazing." And they were saying, "Oh, we should do an American version." and so I went over there and I met them, and they are really impressed. I mean, they've got someone that reads books in, you know, so any book that you think is good, they'll have read it and bought it before you've even, wow, you know,
yeah,
before it's even hit the shelves. Mm. And that's the way to do it, really. You need to completely put all of your energy into what you're doing. So that's what, you know, we're really early days and we're all very busy. There's loads of stuff that we're interested in. And then doing, you know, my own stuff as an actor.
Mm.
Triss, I know you like to say Triss.
totally.
Yeah, I just got it in my head from the pre days that I was like saying actor about 10 years ago, because I thought it was really feminist to say actor. And then Denise Goff said, "No, you have to say actress, because Denise, otherwise we get forgotten. We're just a group of actors rather than, you know, you can't count number of actors in the female actors."
Yeah.
So now I kind of am trying to remind myself to say actress, but...
Well,
I don't know where I stand on that.
No, I mean, the only place I stand on is when I go, I mean, I normally say I'm an actor, and it's when someone goes, "You mean an actress?" And you're like, "I'll call myself what I like."
Yeah, I don't know. I always say actor.
Yeah, I don't know. So I normally do.
Well, there you go. We are
semantics.
What we are.
Yeah.
You came to our launch event at BAFTA last year. What did you take away from it? And do you think it's changed the way you work, or changed your expectations of the way things should be in the industry?
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was absolutely amazing. That event was so brilliant. First of all, it was just a great event, and there was so much energy and positivity. But the best bit was the presentation itself, where, you know, it was so clearly shown to you how much disparity there is. It's shocking. Some of the stuff was really shocking. You know, my previous discussion about, feeling like I was whinging a bit, you know, actually, when you see it laid out before you like that, you think, "Oh my God, actually, I'm going to whinge loads." I thought it was brilliant. There was also a really funny bit about young actresses having been paired up with really older boyfriends in TV shows, and that's happened to me before. And it being, and when you see it laid out in front of you, you just think, "Oh, that is ridiculous," you know. So I actually have challenged that a couple of times when we've cast things, or I've been involved in casting, or I've had a say. But he's 35 years older than me. I'm not sure. And I think that's something that people are keeping in mind. And and definitely the figures. When you have figures, you can go into any meeting and be really bold with them. And and there were some really, really important, influential people there, like not just, you know, women. It was, you know, I know that loads of commissioning people were there, and some heads of studios. And for them to see those figures would have been... you know, really important. So I thought it was an incredible event.
It was just great to like have so many.
There was a real energy.
Yeah, it was great.
It wasn't really positive, but like, you know, kind of there was anger, but it was channeling towards change rather than just dissipated and not focused.
So, it was so good.
Thanks so much.
I will always be a supporter, even past 2020. Yeah. You didn't do it.
Okay, have to, I'm past done.
You didn't do it.
I'm only contracted till then. A massive thank you again to Gemma for coming down to the NT to chat to us. We would really recommend, if you haven't seen them already, checking out the short film that she produced, Leading Lady Parts, and the film that she starred in, The Escape. They are fantastic pieces of work, and we will put a link to them in the show notes.
So every episode we want to champion women's stories, work that promotes 50-50 casting and creative teams. And this week, after hearing about it on Twitter, we went to see A Serial Killer's Guide to Life that celebrated its world premiere at the Arrow Video Fright Fest at the Prince Charles Cinema, Leicester Square. We spoke to audience members after the film to hear what they had to say.
absolutely brilliant. Had no idea what it was going into it, just knew the title of the movie, and it just hits all the buttons of being funny, dark, serious, emotionally engaging, and just bloody good entertainment, really. Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed it.
I loved it. I thought it was really, really good. The acting was amazing. It was surprising. I didn't quite know where it was going to go.
Felt it was, you know, a bit of a mash-up of Thelma and Louise, you know, a touch of Fight Club, you know.
Really enjoyed it. It was a really good film, really funny, funnier than expected. And then the crowd enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, a bit of a little gem, really. Probably one of the highlights of the festival for me this year.
I think it's all the self-help gurus and the fact that you're right there with the lead character.
I don't think it was playing dumb to the audience. I kind of thought the audience would get it and understand it, so I like that.
The interplay between the two leads was really good. Because they were so good together, it sort of wrong-footed you a little bit in where the story was going to be going, which is really good, yeah.
It's great to see those kind of strong characters as females rather than males.
It's great. I really like the fact that definitely at Fright Fest there's been a lack of women in film, and I think they've definitely stepped up. I think there's been a lot of people saying that there's not many female-driven narratives or female-produced things, and it just completely changes how you would film something.
Probably need more women in film, more diverse, not my diverse cast. I mean, I'm a black man, so I mean, for me, I like to see diversity in any sort of film. And you know, when you hear it's produced by a woman, it's amazing. Also, the two main cast characters, for me, watching that film didn't frighten me as in, oh, it's two women on screen, it's just two characters and enjoying the film.
Well, I think it's amazing. Obviously, at the moment, we're trying to, you know, get women out there more and women's work, and I think it's nice to see that that's emerging now, especially in genre films.
It's really good to see. Actually, a couple of films this weekend have been quite female-centred, so maybe things are heading in a more positive direction. Yeah.
I think especially with something to do with like mental health and women's mental health and like their self-help, I think it does change if you have a perspective that's from a female perspective than from a male perspective. And it's nice to have, because they still have male characters in it, it's just nice to have a different array. So having that in Fright Fest is really good, because it means that I'm not having to watch just like the same type of horror every time. It's nice to have something different. And I definitely think, especially this year, there have been so many amazing female-led films and female-produced films, so it's just made the festival much more enjoyable when there's a different type of story being told.
I'm kind of surprised that people are surprised by the fact that women are so good at doing horror. We're really lucky in this country. We have incredibly talented women filmmakers. I think Katie Bonham, in particular, short filmmaker, but also worldwide. We've got Jen and Sylvia Soska, Heather Buckle, who's a wonderful producer. There are so many really talented women in the horror industry at the moment, and it's really great to see them leading a production, both in terms of acting and producing.
Now, not only was the film a female-led story with two fantastic actresses, Katie Braben and Poppy Rowe, at the helm, but the creative team made it their priority to crew and cast the film as a 50-50 gender split so that women were equally represented both on and off the camera. A Serial Killer's Guide to Life will be officially released in early 2020, so catch it then.
And if you're working on a project or currently in the process of crewing your film, then why not head over to primetime.network? It's a database of women working above and below the line in the entertainment industry. And if you'd like to hear more about the database, its creator Victoria Emsley and why she set it up, head back to the third episode of our New Era series where we chatted to her.
And here we have our long list of thank yous. Thank you to our producer, George Jennings, waving at me over there from the other side of the room. To Gemma Arterton, to the creative team behind A Serial Killer's Guide to Life, Poppy Rowe, Staten Cousins Rowe, and Charity Wakefield, and to the audience members for their responses to the film. We would also like to say a massive thank you, as always, to Susan Dyken and everyone at the NT for the use of the studio, and to Spotlight for their continued support.
See you again in 2 weeks' time for episode 6.